Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I'm your host, Crow, and with me on this edition is Thaxos.
Hey.
Dar Kirim.
Yo, yo, yo!
Misha Kitty.
Hello, everyone!
And we have a special guest this time. We have the personnel officer for the Mandalorian Mercs Costuming Club. We have Ulrich Kentier.
Hey, hey!
All right, so first up on the podcast this time, we have some Mercs news like we usually do. The first thing, the quick, nice, easy thing, the social media team applications closed. We're going over your applications now, and we'll be getting back to everybody soon, so stay tuned to Facebook for all the new, sweet, cool things these people will be doing for you.
Okay, so in addition to the social media team, the PR team as a whole was also hiring and will be closing that application process as well in just a few days. So for those of you that applied for that, we'll be getting back with you shortly.
And for anyone that is still thinking they want to help out in any way, there are actually two positions to fill for WordPress content developers on the tech team, and that has just opened up. So check it on out. It's in the announcements thread section.
Right. And in addition to that, we got a couple other bigger topics. We'll start in with the serious topic, the reason why we have our personnel officer here with us tonight. Like we mentioned briefly on last month's episode, and it's been posted up on the forums, but the applications team is going on like a break, a sabbatical or hiatus, if you will, in... What, late September into October is when you guys are doing it?
September 17th, to be exact.
Okay. So, yeah, a few weeks after this comes out, the app team will be going on a break, and Tony's here to explain why and all that cool stuff. So, yeah, like, obviously you guys are really busy, so what's the main reason?
Well, we'd planned this about 6 months ago. There's a lot of method behind my madness, probably more madness than method, but there's still enough. But me and Tom have been talking over the past year and a half of different stages we wanted the app team to take and try to improve the process. And first was the Rusal program, which took a lot longer to refine than we wanted. And with that, it's just the amount of applications coming in with Celebration. We've got Dragon Con this year. The release of Episode 8, Rogue One, coming up in this winter. Star Wars has never been popular than it is now. And more so, you know, our club's getting its name out there. And just people are starting to find us a lot easier. I mean, our applications are... We had a slow first quarter, and now we're really starting to pick up. So we have a restructure that we're going to do internally. That one should really lay out the expectations of each member as an app team member. But now that the Rusal program falls under the app team, I'm going to be setting the expectations for these guys and girls who actually run the pre-app boards and the regional app application training program. So the problem we were finding is that every time we tried to implement one of these new processes or take a break to reset everything, we have too many applications, and every time we get below 100, we'll jump right back up, and a few days later we're above 100. So me and Tom talked about it. It was a tough decision, and unfortunately there's just no really good time to do it with Celebration coming up and everything. So we just decided that the best thing we could do is wait till after Dragon Con and then close doors for a month, so that way we could focus on the current apps that are in there and the restructuring that we need to do.
Seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Did you mention what happens with the apps that are submitted before September 17th as to whether or not they get worked on throughout?
Okay, the applications that actually get posted on September 16th or before will still be worked because we're going to work out all that we can. We just won't be accepting any new ones from September 17th to October 17th. On October 18th, we'll go back live and be accepting new applications. A couple things I'm going to address. Each week, I'm going to have I'm going to stream live from my fan page that I haven't created because I hate social media.
Hear, hear.
I know. I don't mind this. I hate Facebook.
But you're so cuddly.
At times. Sean knows my uncuddly side.
Yeah, you've gotten more and more cuddly the longer you've been on the council, though.
Oh, you guys have just softened me up. I hate you guys.
I like angry Tony. Like the one time we were Skyping and I could hear you like yelling in the background. It was amazing. It made me feel so good. Like,
oh, he's still around. Like,
I was like, yay, that rage. It's beautiful.
Oh yeah, it's still there. A couple of people at work felt it today. It was awesome. We're going to do the first week we'll be addressing the Russals. Oh no, the app team members. I want to set the expectations for them. Second week will be the Russals. Third week, I'll be inviting every Russlor in the club who wants to come. I don't care if anyone comes. Like I said, I hate social media. I hate the fact that I'm even going to do it. But I think it's probably the most efficient because the thing I like about the live videos is if you miss it, you can go back and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of allows people to still catch the information whether they've seen it or not. I will allow questions through PM, but I will have a cutoff time just so that way I don't have any live questions because if I've got a couple hundred people that decide to show up and stream, not saying it'll happen, but just the big thing of what if, it'll be real chaotic for me to take live questions, but I will take, if anyone has any questions, they can always send them to my PM if they think of something during the stream. And then the fourth week, which will be the last week, I'm actually going to post a video of what our daily routine looks like. Mine's a little different, so I'll be skipping the other stuff that I do, which is on the council stuff. So it's basically showing from the moment I sit on the computer what I go through, and we'll have a couple of things set up so it shows kind of. I don't want to show anyone's app, but we'll have some test apps to kind of show what we do and to show the new process. And I'll take some video to show the old process as well. That way everyone can see what changes we did make. And we're hoping this will speed the process of the applications up quite a bit. I think I have the largest team on the Mercs right now, and it's about to get bigger. I don't know. Do I, Sean, or is the...
I'm pretty sure you do. Because especially with the rules rolled in, you got like, what, another 6?
Yep. So I'm going to be adding, so there will be some openings that I will actually during this time be looking at. So I'll have an opening for anywhere between 2 to 4 people, just depending on what we want to do is going to determine how many people we're actually going to bring on.
I have a question for you, Tony.
Shoot.
With the Mercs having surpassed 1,500 members now, and you know now we've got the Ruth Souls that were once the regional command staff, but now they're rolled up underneath you. And I'm just wondering, are we going to see a change to the app team where it's not going to be... And again, this is just me thinking off the top of my head. Will we see it go from being a centralized team to possibly eventually being broken up to multiple teams for regional areas?
Never regional areas, because unfortunately the one thing I've noticed is we're biased when it comes to our own region. In a lot of cases, it's not a bad thing, but it's also a very difficult thing, especially when we're dealing with something so close to home. But to answer your question we are breaking up into teams. And it'll be 4-man teams where we'll have 4 people voting on just applications moved to their team board. And basically, it gives just 4 people. It will only be trained people, so the new people we bring on, they need to kind of learn the ropes before we bring them on to start voting. But basically, it'll be multiple teams to kind of help push it through. As far as a regional app process, we'll never head that way just because we want to keep the quality control more centralized rather than regionalized.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like, I was just wondering because, like, I know, and again, it's not right to compare ourselves to the 501st because they run things differently, but they've also got 10,000 more members than we do. And so I just wondered how eventually you see your team changing and evolving with the growth of our club.
And that's what these teams are set to do, is to kind of allow us to be more fast and efficient. And the nice thing is myself and Tom, we actually continue to be a main part of the app team. What we're going to do is we're taking a step back, and the only voting we'll actually do is for tiebreakers. So we'll be assigned several teams, and if they end up in a 2-versus-2 tie, which is rare, but it does happen, myself or Tom will be the deciding vote, so that way we can push these applications fast through. And then if I see a team that's dragging their feet, it's a lot easier to identify from 4 people next to 7 people.
You know, and I find this fascinating because I've been, I think with the exception of maybe Frost and Brian, I don't know when they came in, but I've been around since 2009, so I'm kind of like the old man of the club and the podcast.
I'm right there with you.
And it's fascinating watching the changes that this club has had over the years, and to finally see the app team get a big shift. Like, each personnel officer has kind of put his or her mark on the team, but to see what you're doing with the application team is just fascinating to me because, A, it's a credit to your skills, your leadership, your background, and everything you're putting into it. And it also shows how our club has grown and the requirement of evolving that we've had to have to fulfill the growth of members from just the exponential growth or regrowth of Star Wars fandom. So to me, like I said, it's just a fascinating thing, and I'm happy to hear that you guys are going to take a new approach on handling, because I know there's a lot of people who complain that, you know, they put in their applications and it takes weeks and weeks and weeks, and I've had to, you know, as an Allerad, tell several people, look, you need to, you know, chill, it'll happen, it'll get there, but I'm just glad to see that you guys are making an attempt to help streamline the process and help make things better for up-and-coming new members.
Yeah, and our excuse me, our approval process is different than the 501st. I mean, as a, is anybody else on the podcast a dual member?
Yep.
I'm not okay. Currently, but I'm working on it.
Well, then you're not.
Well, no.
Wow, so I guess that's just me.
Fine.
I am.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, but just Misha.
Yeah, but Sean, you're from Kanuckistan, so you don't count.
No, Sean, what's your other costume?
It's Republic Commando.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, skinniest Republic Commando that missed the MREs.
Oh, well, I know that all of the application processes are a little bit different. When I applied for the Rebel Legion, I got approved in like a day. Pretty much both times. And the 501st, it was interesting because at least when I was approved at that time, they actually had like a state person, and he and his team sort of looked at things and approved them, and they're kind of the ones that said, you know, yay or nay. So I think that I've always been very impressed with our app team, because I know that when I've worked with members from the other clubs, like the Rebel Legion or the 501st, when they're coming into our club, they always say, like, well, why didn't I get a response back right away? Don't you guys have a state person? And it's like, no, we've literally got like 5 or 6 people that do it for the entire world. And that's always been super impressive to me, because yeah, like, we have the Rusalors and their job is to guide the members, but I know plenty of people, cough cough, my husband, who built their kit in secret, And
needs a backplate.
Well, which Thaxos and Rogi both called out both of the two things that he got dinged on, and as did I. And so, I mean, we kind of knew going in that would probably happen. But, you know, we get members who either don't know about the Rusalure, or maybe the clan you're in doesn't have one that's very active, or whatever reasons. And I think it's really awesome that you guys are looking at those needs and working to address them and expand. And that's pretty fantastic.
And that's one of the big things that we want to address is, it's a touchy subject, but the Rusalures of the club, I expect more of them. And in the end, the Rusalure of the club is a mini app team person. Right. I mean, if they're really doing their job, that's what they should be doing. And when I have this call, I mean, it's going to be a come to Jesus talk for some of them, because, you know, if they take it serious, because I'm not going to point out people. It's very unfair to do that. And it's very unproductive, but I am going to call out the white elephants in the room and say, hey, you know, we got to fix this, because if we don't say it, you know, everyone's going to walk around thinking they're, you know, they're class A material, and they don't understand that they're not helping their clan by not doing their job. And we have to point it out. And we're going to be very more involved with the Rusalures, with the Rusals, than we ever have. And it's going to be stressful at first. We're already, you know, seeing a little bit of kickback because they're not used to us being in their kitchen. But
you kind of have to be.
Yeah. And that's what I haven't done. That's the one thing I looked at. What could I do more of? So before, I just had my kitchen. Well, now I just blew up everyone else's kitchen, and now they all work in my big, gigantic kitchen.
But I think that's important because, I mean, having been through the Mercs application process twice and having helped several other people go through it and experiencing everything from my first kit getting kicked back once, my second kit not getting any kickbacks, and then, you know, a couple of the other kits that I helped with, you know, either going through on the first pass through or getting kicked back. I think it's important because it, you know, those Rusalures, they're who we look at to say gently and with love and compassion, because, you know, I'm sure that's how everyone handles things, but they're the ones that we really want to say, oh, hey, you know, you need to fix this, and here are some suggestions, because you don't want to get to that final step, which is the application process, and find out you've got 20 things that need to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes... Sorry.
This is a problem we have. People post on the armor boards, and I applaud that. Please post. But you have people that are like, hey, good job, great, way to go. No one gives feedback. And my team misses some things. Mm-hmm. And when we look back at the thread, we'll be like, hey, you know, this is very inadequate. Why did we all say good job? And you look at the Rusalure, and he's like, well, I didn't want to hurt her feelings. I already hurt his feelings. And I'm like, you have to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
And to really compound on that, I have a funny story. My current Allaradin, when she listens to this, I'll get a phone call. It'll be funny. when she first started working on the kit, she scratch-built her helmet. First off, my hat's off to her. I would never even try that, because my kit is the best artist work I've done. Next to that is Stickman drawings. That's about as far as I get. Her helmet was, it needed work. And I could have approached this in so many different ways, but I remember we were all at a get together, and they asked what I thought of her helmet. And I looked at her and I said, it sucks. It's horrible. still to this day, I have to deal with the repercussions. They won't let me live it down, but it's kind of our Rusalure training guide of what not to do. And I did this as the personnel officer. So lo and behold, she became my Allarad 4 months later, and I could not have been happier. She's done a fantastic job, but we still have a good time about that.
Well, and you know, I mean, that's something that, and I'm hoping that the folks who are listening to this podcast, you never know when you'll be called to step into a leadership position. I never, in a million year, actually, my anniversary came up recently with the Mercs. I think it was like last week, and because I joined in 2012, and so it was right around last week, and 4 years, my 4 year anniversary, and never in a million years when I was running around at Celebration did I ever think that I would be on the podcast for this, or doing like the second in command of the PR, like that's crazy, or even having been a Viralore. So you never know like when you'll wind up in that position. And so I'm hoping maybe some of the folks listening to this will someday be a Rusalore, and kind of similar to that story Tony just shared, you know, I had a similar issue happen, and I was surprised, I guess I could say, because, you know, when you're the Rusalore, like Tony just said, sometimes you have to be the bad guy, and sometimes you have to be the bearer of bad news. But you don't have to, you know, be a jerk about it. So, you know, you can definitely do it in a way that's Oreo cookie that, you know, like, well, tell them something good, drop the bomb, and then you know, follow it up with, oh, but this is nice. Because I know when one of the kits that I helped build debuted at MegaCon, and it was a surprise, and no one knew that that kit was there, and we took it, and nobody even knew who it was, and they took it to the Rusalore, and the Rusalore at the time was it? I mean, they were nice, but they kind of picked it apart, and all I could think of was like, man, you know, if this wasn't the person that was in that kit, that actually might be a little off-putting to a brand new member. So, you know, just keep in mind, like, you always want to be honest and open. Just don't be a jerk about it.
One of the things that our app team has to deal with that, say, the 501st or Rebel Legion doesn't is, you know, unless you're doing Boba Fett or Jango Fett screen accurate costumes, which you have a rundown list exactly what parts of what you need and where they go and how they fit, and, you know, unless you're doing one of those, everything else, you know, my costume and Misha's costume or Thaxos's costume are all so widely variant that, you know, when it comes to our CRLs, the costume requirements list, they're more like guidelines. I mean, it's literally kind of like, you know, what Captain Barbossa says in Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, they're guidelines. They're there to kind of work around.
Exactly. And
when I'm, you know, working my table and I'm explaining to people about our club, and I have my officer handbook on the table, and I've got a whole 3 or 4 or 5 different pages for the trading cards that we have. And I use the trading cards to show off the variety of our costumes and everything. And, you know, the benefit that we have is we have the freedom to pour our personal identities into these costumes. But on the backside of that, you know, you've got 1,000 different members who have 1,000 different opinions on what a Mandalorian looks like that's not Boba Fett or Jango Fett. So then you've got X amount of individuals applying to the app team with this perception of theirs in mind, but then you've got an app team that has to turn around and tell them, I'm sorry, but you can't do that. And it breaks a lot of hearts. So unfortunately, the app team has the toughest job in our club, but I mean, they have to do it, because if we didn't try to rein in on some of the creativity that people have, I don't think we would be taken as seriously as a club, because if we just allowed any kind of willy-nilly costume, our legitimacy would not be as as extreme as it is. So,
oh yeah, like I remember when I was getting started in the club 6 years ago, there were a lot of little internet memes going around of like the 501st is this, and it's the Stormtrooper template with all the measurements and crap. And then there was a drawing of a Mandalorian, which was like a toy Boba Fett helmet, some BMX gear, and like some spiked belts.
And
like that's how people used to view us until we started taking ourselves seriously.
I still see those, BMX costumes pop up on occasion, but it's funny that, you know, I've seen some individuals at local cons that, you know, they have chosen to not affiliate with our club because of our standards, and that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to a point where if I'm addressing somebody who's interested in the club, or rather yet, interested in Mandalorian armor, you know, I have to make clear to them as I'm, as we're discussing their interest, I go, And I lay it out there. I say, if you're making Mandalorian costume, cool, I can help you with that. If you want to make a Mando Mercs approved costume, I can help you with that as well. But the standards are going to be completely different. You know, I will definitely help somebody who wants to make a costume. But if they're going to just make a costume to run around in, and I know this makes me sound bad, but I'm not going to take them nearly as seriously as I would somebody who wants to make a Mando Mercs costume, because, you know, my bread and butter is this club. This is my family. This is my focus. But if you're interested in just making a random costume, I'll show you how to do it. I'll give you advice. But, you know, my focus is this club. And unfortunately, there are some people who don't want to be involved with it. And that's perfectly fine on their end, you know. But a lot of people fail to realize what the app team goes through on a daily basis. So I hope these new changes that you're putting in, Ulrich, I hope that they help streamline the process for your team, and I hope to see a more positive turnout for costumes in the future because of the way you're restructuring it.
Yeah, and I really just kind of I echo everything Dar said, and I think you can be really proud of the changes that you've put in place already. I mean, we're seeing amazing quality kits coming out of the different applications that we've had, and I'm excited to see the regional Russels. Yes, Russels. I just call them roosters because it's easier for me. Yeah, so I'm really excited to see the big roosters helping the littler roosters. But all joking aside, because to me, the clans, Rusalors, they're kind of like the face, you know what I mean? Like, they're the people that are actually have a really good chance of bumping into these new folks and actually seeing them face to face and talking to them. And one thing that that I know just from being the part of the PR team is sometimes things don't come across quite the way you want them to in messaging. And when you're super excited about your kit and you get this email back that says you need to fix X, Y, and Z, you could throw in a billion heart emoticons and somebody still might get their tail in a kink. So what I love about the Russels is that they're Russels, dang it, and the Russelors, they're there and they're able to actually see these people in person a lot of times and work with them. And that's why I think it's really awesome that you're going to be helping kind of retrain them and talk to them and make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, we have to do the one thing that no one wants, and that's to hear, like, hey, you need to fix this. But it's also, if I'm not upsetting people, I'm not doing my job. Now, it doesn't mean I like it, but it's the truth. We've got to uphold the quality of the club. And you want the kits to look like they've come out of a movie. Now, some of them are the most basic of kits, and I actually like these more because it shows someone who understands. It shows someone like myself. I had no idea how to do any of this, and I went very basic, and I slowly just upgraded my kit throughout the years until I got satisfied, and then I built a second kit, and it's all that, all the things I learned, I built something that now I feel like I put it on, I'm happy. I don't look like, oh man, his kit looks better than mine. I'm not envious, but do I think my kit is better than most? Well, yeah. And when you get to that level, I'd hope everyone feels that way, because that means you built something that culminates the top of your skill. And it's an amazing thing when you finally get that OM tag and you're able to say, you know, I did it. And that's what we want people to say. Now, I know the wait times have been a lot longer than we prefer. It's just been very overwhelming, but this is going to change. And I understand everyone's upset. We're upset too, because, you know, as hard as we try, we can't combat it any more than we are. So just be patient with us, and even be patient throughout the year, because we're trying some new things, but this is going to get better. And by doing so, you know, again, the quality of the club is upheld, and we don't have to worry about, we can worry about the bigger things, and, you know, Celebration 8 coming up, which I'm super excited for, and I hope to see a lot of you there.
So, yeah, so just again, in summation, it's from September 17th to October 17th this year. No applications will be processed during that time, while the app team goes through its retraining and restructuring.
They're going to go into their cocoon like a butterfly. I mean, like a caterpillar, and come out like a butterfly.
Right. And I mean, it's like, only Misha. Equate it to, like, if you're going to fix a bridge, you got to tear the bridge apart, the old bridge apart first.
Yep.
You know, so it's just give them some time and they'll be right back at it. In the meantime, listen to your Rusalores. Use this extra month if you're, you know, you think your application's ready to go on like the 16th of September. Use the month. You know, tweak, do your final touches, review it with your clan officers, your Rusalore, or just any of the veteran members in your club, but definitely your Rusalore. And don't try and sneak that application in under the wire, because it's just not... No, just don't.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's bad.
Yeah. Even when the app team is in full swing and full operation, don't sneak your application in and try and surprise people. Just talk to people that you can get some good feedback from, like your Rusalore.
And use the pre and the regional pre-app thread.
Yeah, your regional pre-app thread, which will still be active.
Yes.
So yes. That's definitely the best place to go. So yeah, send your pre-app picks to your Rusalore, and they will send it up to the rest of us in your regional command area. Like, I get to review kits from all over the Northeast. It's actually really cool, because I get to see more armor now than I used to. And it's been very good. It's helped a lot of people. I just got a new OM a couple weeks ago because of the pre-app process that's been put in place. So,
And Crow, if you could answer, how many... Was he a first-time go? Or did that individual get kickbacks?
She got a couple minor kickbacks. I forget exactly what they were. She showed them to me in person, and she had some pretty good build threats going, so it was easy to fix. But like, I think she had like a loincloth that was too like bath towel-y the first time. So she fixed and upgraded that, and I think she had some alignment issues was one of the other things for sure. So it was just little things, and then she was in constant contact with you guys, and once everybody had the time to vote on her application, she went through like second time, no problem.
And that's what the pre-app process does. I know we are getting a lot of kickback on it, and it's proven that if between first-time goes and minor kickbacks, it's about 60% of the time it's one of those.
Right.
Whereas if you don't use the pre-app, you're just rolling the dice.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my stance of this is we've got a lot of people who are like, I don't want to do the process, but I want to complain. It's going to sound a little harsh, but this is pretty much, you know, if you don't want to participate in the new way we're doing things, you've got no box to stand on.
Yeah.
I'll listen, but I won't take it as serious as I will from someone who's going through the process and pointing out, hey, or this worked, but I think this would improve the system. I want to hear what's wrong with my system. I want people to tell me it's broken so I can find out where to fix it, because that's the only way we get better. But if you don't jump on the train and try and get involved with what we're trying to do, you're missing out. And more so, your UMs are missing out, because my goal by Celebration 8, and I think we're going to push it pretty hard. I'd like to get close to the 5,000 mark of total kits approved. And
by Celebration 8?
By Celebration 8. Now, I know my team's probably going to hate me for saying that. but it's the truth of the matter is we're at, oh, not 5,000. I'm sorry. What number am I looking at?
Yeah, give me a second, guys. I was going to say,
2,000.
Like,
that's
guys checking the box on every single person who comes through the door.
My correction. Wow, my bad. check, edit. No, don't say it. 2,000.
We'll edit that, yeah.
I could, yeah.
Yeah, 2,000. That.
We'll leave it in the bloopers.
Yeah, 2,000. Oh. Like, I could see that happening, for sure. Like,
And it's still a large number. 500 is a large number to grab, but I think we can do it.
Well, we're not even at 500 anymore. Like, we're much, today, with, like, these last couple batches that have been through, we're much closer to 16 already.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, Rogue One hasn't come out yet. The ramp up for Celebration is always a huge, huge, like, busy time for you guys.
Gotta get McCurstrom in!
I've been there. Well, no. No, I actually haven't. Never mind. That's
weird.
That's one milestone I haven't done. Like, I've done major upgrades in anticipation for Celebration, but I've never had to go through the app process immediately beforehand.
We're currently at 1,530 members.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think 2,000 is not out of the ballpark. It's going to be a lot of work on our end, but it's just another milestone that we can check off the box and look towards the horizon, towards the next.
Oh, yeah. So, one of the other things that we have... Ulrich on, we mentioned this last month too, but we can elaborate on it now. Dar mentioned the last time that you and he were sort of working on a format for a large scale X-Wing game or tournament or something along those lines to happen at any of these big conventions that we have, like Mega Cons or Dragon Cons or especially the Celebrations.
Yeah, we've unfortunately, and more fortunate for our wallets, me and Dar are heavily addicted to X-Wing miniatures. So
I know that feeling.
We've been thinking, oh, it's so painful. It's like my wife got on to me the other day. She's like, you know, I keep seeing these little boxes coming. I know what they are. And I'm like, I have no idea, because I'm real sneaky about it. I try to just get everything unlocked and try to put it in the case real quick. Well, she saw it in the trash. Like, I know what that is. I'm like, oh, crap. I was like, sorry. So I got the trash out. And she's like, you know, he hasn't gotten on for a week. And she looks at my case and she's like, those two are new. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I'm kind of on I'm on Amazon watch right now. I found a way to lock my order list. Well, now she found a way to get to that. So I'm like, I'm screwed. Let's just say she looked at the last year, and I'm in the doghouse right now.
But for the most part, so what it is we're working on a gameplay where what do you say about about four or five people each, and we each have our one X-Wing or TIE Fighter or whatever small base ship that it is that we're going to fight with. And we have 37 points to load up all the stats and everything we can up to 37. Oh, it's 38 now?
Yep.
And from there, we will be playing It's pretty much a free-for-all, everybody against everybody. And the goal is to survive as long as you can, but also to get as many points as you can. The more points you rack up, you know, from killing other spaceships, you know, you'll build up. And then if you get blown up yourself, you'll lose points. I believe if I scroll onto this page, I think you have it posted on the Mando Aces page, don't you?
Yes.
All right, so I have it pulled up here. So, all right, here's the variation of the Ace format. Aces allows for group players to get together and play a fast round of X-Wing in as little as a lunch hour. This is done by restricting players to a single ship and allowing respawns if players are eliminated early in the game. So you got your standard mat size, 3x3 foot, 3 to 6 players. You throw in your 6 asteroids. And by the way, if you don't understand X-Wing, I'm probably speaking Gamorrean to you right now, so just enjoy the show and follow along. Fast forward to the next segment. Ships per player is 1, points per ships is 38, so your time limit 1 hour. And each ship has 38 available squad points to build a single ship. He or she may bring only a small ship, and as long as it does not exceed 38 points, and adheres to all other squad building rules. The band upgrades is a Dengar crew card, which I'm not going to get into it here, but if you want to know more, get with Tony or I.
It's a really cool card game wise, and they did it so that someone would have a reason to want to play Dengar as a card. It is a very popular card because in the game format, it is a very good card. It lets you do extra damage if you're not doing enough damage.
It is so broken.
Unfortunately, for the concept of the game that we're setting up, it's kind of a cheat card.
Right.
So, anyway, so the setup. All right, players take position around the 3x3 mat, determining the initiative. The fewest points spent on his or her ship goes first, I believe. I guess that's how you got it written here.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I see it now. You roll amongst players tied for the fewest points. Player who wins determines who takes initiative. Initiative order then rotates clockwise to determine player's order of the same pilot skill. If there are... Do you guys want me to read all this?
No.
I mean... I didn't think so.
I'm Rodian. It sounds Gamorrean.
It's... let me see if I can sum this up any. It's basically standard X-Wing rules. Within this one ship thing, but one of the biggest changes I see that you guys have in here is a stopwatch system, where the active player gets 5 seconds to show where they're moving the ship, and then they get 10 seconds to say what that ship's doing that round. Which, it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but considering if you're playing with 8 people, you've got 8 people's other turns to figure out what you're doing, and if you haven't figured it out by then, you're gonna get shot.
So it's kind of like speed chess.
Yeah.
In a sense, it kind of puts the stress on you. It's almost like the stress of a dogfight. And the nice thing is with this format, unlike other X-Wing formats, it's more forgiving. And it's more of a social experience than the actual... You get the gaming experience and you get to have fun and... If you're out, you get to respawn, so there's some respawn rules. But you can go on the Mercs Aces social group and actually read the rules. I think it's on page 2. And it's a lot of fun. I've already played the format myself. We found a couple of house rules that we need to implement to kind of keep the fun of the game. But it's just, you don't have to have big... You don't have to have all the ships. You can just have your ship and some certain upgrade cards, and then boom, you've got enough to play the format.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm looking at it, and one of the things that I see that's really cool is it does, because if you haven't played, you have the set number of points, and each pilot for each ship has a set number of points. So, like, within 38 points, there are some pilots that are, like, really high skill and have really cool abilities that are creeping up to, like... 32, 34 points. So that only gives you like a little teeny bit of leeway to load the ship up with guns. Whereas if you take a cheaper pilot who won't be as good flying around, maybe, but then you can load him up with rockets and bombs and just shoot everybody from far away. Maybe. Right. If you're flying right. So it does, I like that it adds like a certain little tacticalness to it. And it, the other big thing I like about it is that it completely destroys metagame. Really.
Oh, yes.
Because this way you physically cannot have the Brobot Squadron, which is just two to four IG-88 ships that everybody flies because they're good. It's just like, you have a TIE fighter. So does that
guy. Don't blow up.
Yeah. Like, so it's, this is, yeah, I like this. I'm pretty excited to give this a shot next time. That we have one of these big things.
And I'd hope to see some people paint up their ships. Like, I've started painting up mine. I actually finished mine already. Bill's painting his. I already know Dara's going to paint his because, well, I did it, so now he's going to have to do it. Yeah. Peer pressure is just fun.
I painted up one of my ships. I have a fire, not a fire spray. I have a Star Viper. That's painted up black, silver, and chrome. Because I just can't get away from that color scheme to save my life.
Tony and I, we were also, when we started brainstorming this idea, now don't take this as set in stone yet. We are kind of thinking about ways of making personalized cards where, you know, instead of, like, I would generally just grab Poe Dameron and throw him into the game and go with the stats, but we thought it would be really cool is if we had our ship that we've designated, this is going to be the ship that we're going to fly, design up a card with like a picture of our, like my Mandalorian costume in the picture, and then instead of it being Poe Dameron, it's Dar Kirrim. Now
it still has all his abilities and stat line and all that stuff.
Yeah, it'll
That's
still,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
So when we come to Celebration 8, you know, not only are we coming in with a personalized ship for this game, but boom, we throw down our card, and it's, you know, it's not going to be Tony's rusted out hunker TIE bomber with whoever he got listed as it. What is that, Tomax something or other?
Tomax friend, buddy. I'm gonna crack shot you all day.
But you know, when he comes in, he's going to have a picture of Ulic Cantir looking as rusty and busted as his TIE bomber. So it'll be really cool to be able to tie us to our game through, you know, our own customization. Our own customization.
And that has a nice little side effect that I was just thinking of. Like, because it's one ship, I'm pretty guaranteed you're going to have a bunch of guys picking the same pilots. Just cause. So this way, that way you do avoid having three Poe Damerons on the table. Even though there still technically are, but that way it's not like, which Poe are you? Is this one me? Is that one you? Like, no, so I'm me.
Yeah.
It's something that we're playing around with. I don't know the best way that we're going to implement it, but we'll plan out some different things and we'll see what we can come up with. But it's just one of the things that we had tossed around, and I think it would be really, really cool for gameplay as it is. But, you know, it's just something that I'd like to see at least come out.
Yeah, and we're going to see we're going to see all sorts of, you know, like you said, it breaks the meta, so we're going to see all sorts of ships. I've got someone already playing a Y-Wing. Crow said you gonna bring out your Viper, Crow?
Well, that's where I'm like on the fence, because on the one hand I love the Star Viper. Like, I've always loved it since, you know, Shadows of the Empire. I've always thought it was just such a cool ship, and I was so thrilled when they included it in the game. So much so that I bought two and I painted one up to look like me. But as a ship, it's not perhaps as good to fly as some of the others. Like, there are other ships that I like to fly more in the squads, just because they work better, or they, you know, they do my tactics better.
Right.
so I might not necessarily want to fly my favorite ship. I might want to play a ship that I think will do better. But then at the same time, I don't know how this ship flies solo. I've always flown it in a squad. I might bring it along just because.
See, and that's going to be kind of interesting, too, where most people who play this game, I mean, they've got at least 2 to 3 to 5 ships. I mean, however tanky or beefy or weak a ship that they come out with. But this is also going to challenge people to learn to play completely differently than they normally do. Because normally, like I said, you're going to have a fleet of ships to come out that a lot of them have a symbiotic relationship with. You've got certain ships that feed off of the abilities and benefits that other ships have flying next to them. But now you've got to sit down and think, well, how am I going to be able to do this by myself without other ships that would, in lack of better terms, improve the flying of ship A without ship B, C, and D? So it's going to be a challenge for people to A, play against people they've never played against, B, play in a manner that they've never experienced before, and then to follow up with that, you've got more, you know, you're going to have at least 3 to 6 people on a table, so not only do you have to worry about what the guy next to you or across from you is doing, but you got to worry about what everybody else is doing. So will everybody all gang up on one ship? Will it be a free-for-all? Will people make temporary alliances and then turn around and blast Tony out of the sky? Who knows? So it's going to be an interesting gameplay that you're not normally going to see, and it takes a lot of, A, the meta and get rid of it, and it takes a lot of the tournament-style competitiveness and throw it out the window, because we don't want that. We want this to be fun, where we can get together in between table duties, or, you know, before the Mercs Bash, or whenever we end up planning to do it. We get together, we throw some dice, we blow up Tony's hunkered out TIE bomber, and you know, and we just have a good time, rather than trying to determine out a tournament list and who's going to be the top rank, blah, 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 you know, and who's going to come with a fat Han. And you know, it's, we're going to take that competitive angle out and make it fun for everybody.
I just want you to know, advanced proton torpedoes, I'm coming right at you, Darth. I'm coming right at you.
I guess you don't know what a Talon turn and a barrel roll is yet, do you?
There's a reason why I have a pilot skill 8.
Pilot skill 9.
No. I want to shoot after you. Because I'm gonna hurt you. I love you, buddy, but I'm my hunkered out TIE bomber. She doesn't look like much, but she's got it where it counts.
This is gonna be so good.
Yeah, no, this is gonna be fun.
The trash talk is gonna be so fun.
We might have to just stream a game, or at least part of a game as part of the celebration madness.
Oh yes, but it's gonna happen.
We'll get there when we get there in April. Which now I'm, you know. Good job, guys. You made me more excited.
Yay! Mission accomplished!
Yay.
For a final bit of Mercs news, we've got some forum changes that you guys will have seen at this point. Doing the maintenance tonight after we're recording this. But essentially what's going on is we are overhauling the Identify Yourself board area. So that's going to look totally different for you guys. So it's no longer going to be, you know, some stuff in general discussion. There still will be a general discussion, as, and you guys will be able to see this direct, but essentially the reason it's going the way it is that, you know, the forum rules, some other introductory guides, you know, don't really sit the greatest in the announcements thread, and we want to make sure that everybody sees that when they first join up to the boards. So we're going to have a new members area that you'll now see, and that'll have, you know, the rules, some guides, and a little bit of a section, so if you guys are stuck on anything with the forums, you can find all the answers there. Additionally, the PM system is going to change a little bit. So we're adding a mod called the Enhanced PM System. So there's going to be, in addition to your inbox and send items, there's also going to be an outbox. So if you send off a PM and you wrote in the wrong thing or you have a typo, if that person hasn't read it yet, you can actually edit it. It's going to have a quote all feature, so that way, depending on the user, some people may not have really encountered this, but if you write a message to several people, you can either quote that message to one person or you can reply all. So the workaround would either be you quote it and then you type in the other recipients, but now there's going to be a quote all function, as well as some other stuff that'll be explained in the guide. So that's why there was form maintenance on the Wednesday. And yeah, so hopefully everyone likes the updates.
And if they hate them, that's too bad.
They can get banned. No.
The ban hammer!
Hang on. Let me make sure I'm not forgetting anything else on that. No, that's basically it. It's just a ton of work on my end, but we don't need to include that. It always surprises me when I summarize what's happening, and I'm like, yeah, it's just this. And I'm sitting there looking at the 3+ hours it's going to take.
Oh, yeah.
Quote, just this. But, anyways, now we can talk. Star Wars news.
Star Wars news.
Rebels!
Well, Rebels. Rebels is happening. Rebels is happening in just a couple weeks. Season 3 is starting up. We'll get to see Grand Admiral Thrawn come back, which we're all super excited about. And whatever else they have in store, like the trailer thing is neat. There's like that came out a little while ago. We had like Kanan is still apparently blind. Ezra gets a haircut.
Doesn't Ezra also spurt up like an extra foot and a half?
I love that taller. Ezra gets a haircut.
Well, isn't Ezra also taller?
Maybe, I don't know. I've never really to be very honest. When I do watch Rebels, I very rarely pay attention to Ezra. but it does make me wonder, like the haircut specifically, is it because like I think Disney and Dave Filoni and the creative team behind Star Wars Rebels might finally be getting tired of Space Aladdin as a common criticism of the character design.
Maybe.
But it's never really bothered me. But that's happening. That'll be coming out soon, so enjoy that and whatever else comes through Rebels for that. Next bit of Star Wars news, really the cooler bit of Star Wars news. The Rogue One trailer that aired during the Olympics, that was cool. That was real cool.
So good!
It honestly didn't show us that much more than the previous one did. Just elaborated on a couple of the scenes that the first teaser trailer showed us, like the kung fu guy doing the space kung fu on a bunch of stormtroopers.
Technically, he's not doing. If you really want to get technical about it,
he is not performing specific martial art. But he
not space taekwondo.
We don't need to analyze his combat technique.
Yes, we do, because it's beautiful and amazing. And it's kind of Shaolin Kung Fu because he's using, because Donnie Yen, like one of his specialties is actually like spear or staff. So like a lot of the movies that you see him in, they really try to highlight that because he's very, very good at it. So yeah, you'll see him using a lot of that. And that's in that clip is so beautiful because you can see how well he manipulates that pole arm type weapon. But, I mean, I don't know if you'd really call it kung fu. Like, I'm not sure
It's Hollywood kung fu, which is...
No, actually, he's new. Yes. No, he actually is trained.
No, I know he's trained, but that is literally his job. Don't get me wrong. Donnie Yen is an excellent actor and an excellent martial artist. Like, I love all of his work. He's fantastic. And I am really happy to see him in Star Wars. I really am. I am a little disappointed that they're doing the same thing with him in this movie that he is in every other one of his movies. That's my only disappointment. I'm really interested to see how they fit it in. I'm really interested to see how they make it work within Star Wars. Because typically you don't have the Shaolin monk, the blind master template, like stock character in Star Wars, really. So I'm interested to see how they fit it in. And I will always watch Donnie Yen kick some butt. Always. I will always
From my understanding from watching the Celebration Europe panel, and it's not really spoilery, but he is blinded. He's not a Force user, but he believes
he's Force sensitive.
So, I mean, I think they're going to play him kind of how they implied Maz Kanata, how she is not a Jedi, but she knows the Force. He's of the same method where he's not Jedi. And I don't think he's even Force sensitive. I think he's just a huge follower and believer in the Force. So they're pulling it. They're really pulling back the mysticism of the Force rather than the midichlorian science-y, you know.
Which is
great. Right, and folks who are martial artists will really connect with that. So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Crow, because this is like hand-to-hand combat is not really something we've seen in the movies. The movies have been a lot of anybody jumps on me and is like, well, they have lightsabers. Yeah, not the same.
Like the Tonfa. The TR-8R trooper was the first time we saw anybody going at anyone else with a melee weapon. That wasn't a Sand person or a Gamorrean.
Yeah, and I mean, even that was pretty iffy, but I think it's really interesting because they're opening up a whole new category of fighting, and the way in which, exactly what Dar just said, like, they're going away from the whole, like, science-y bit of it, it's more into the mysticism, and that's a natural fit for a lot of martial arts and a lot of just kind of the, you know, philosophy that kind of goes along with it. So I think it's a really nice element to bring in, and frankly one that we haven't seen before, so I'm very excited to see what they do with it. I disagree that he's playing every character he's played before, but then I've had to sit through a lot of Donnie Yen movies, so I think that, like, until you've seen Iceman, like, you're like, oh yeah, okay, that's not the same. But I think that I do totally understand where you're coming from of, like, oh, he's totally doing kind of that, like, cliche blind master, and I mean, maybe. But I still think it's funny because I know a lot of martial artists that are very, very excited by the idea of lightsabers, but even they talk about how a lot of what's done with them is more stage combat-y not like,
90%,
you know,
of it is stage combat-y, especially in the prequels. Like,
but I mean, when you're, it's kind of neat when you're talking with martial arts masters to hear, like, their take on it. It's actually a lot of fun. I enjoy posting clips of that sort of thing on my Facebook page, and then all of a sudden, like, all the martial arts masters come out of the woodwork, like, they're all commenting. It's really cool. But this is different. You're gonna see some things. The clip that was posted, the second clip, I think it was, the one that went during the Super Bowl, I got an absolutely ecstatically excited text from my husband, and it said, at 2 minutes and 30 something seconds in, Hammer Fist by Donnie Yen. And I mean, this was like a 2 second clip that went by. It's a clip of him in the jungle, and he kind of brings his fist back, and most people would be like, oh yeah, he just, like, hit that dude in the face. But, you know, he's looking at it and seeing exactly the technique in it. So I think it's kind of cool that they're bringing in someone who has some legitimate fighting, like a history of being really steeped in some of the different arts, and bringing that in there. Ray Park was another one who had some really beautiful technique, and I think that pulls in a whole nother different audience, and I just think that that's cool because it's a new element they're adding, and I could go on for the whole rest of the podcast about how amazing it's gonna be.
That's one of the reasons I am so happy to see Donnie Yen in, is like that Ray Park feel Like, when you watch the end battle of Episode 1, you look at Darth Maul and you're like, okay, this is a man who knows what he's doing. And then you look at the two Jedi, who are not... They know how to use a lightsaber, clearly, but it's just like, oh, these two don't do this all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows.
Well,
that was the angle they wanted, and that was honestly probably the best part of Episode 1. I think we can all agree.
It's interesting that you said that, because I listened to a clip of Kevin Smith earlier today from an interview that he was talking about why you shouldn't hate the prequels, which, you know, I never have and never will. But, and it's interesting that you describe Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon as Jedi who don't do their fights on a normal basis like that, because it was described to Kevin Smith by Dave Filoni that if you look through the prism of the prequels being the failure of the Jedi, and that's why the Jedi were not on their A game as they are expected to be, as they are described as being the best fighters and caretakers of the galaxy and whatnot. You know, they were so easily manipulated and twisted by the dark side into their failure. So I'm sorry, I'm going on a complete random tirade here, but the way you described, the way you mentioned how Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, you know, that wasn't their best fighting compared to Darth Maul, who that's what he's been doing for, you know, 5 hours a day for the past 8 years. So it's just interesting to hear you say that, and then it kind of tied into something that I heard earlier today.
No, that whole theory is, I've always found, pretty accurate. Like, one of the big explanations in Episode 2 of the guy that jumps down in front of Jango, and Jango guns him down off the balcony. The explanation for that guy was that he did like the basic lightsaber crap, and then was mostly a diplomat the rest of the day. So he was just outmatched in every way.
Yeah.
And that was a symptom of all of the problems that we just mentioned. But yes, that is why Donnie Yen is in.
to give
Star Wars some serious martial arts gravitas.
And it also, it's also very appealing to some of the different...
demographics?
The different demographics. I mean, he's a huge star in other countries, and I think it's fantastic that Star Wars is kind of opening up to... And they've always been very good about that, quite frankly. You know, they've always been great about having people from a number of different places coming in. Well, I'm excited to see him in there and see exactly what they'll do with him.
Yep.
And
I'm hoping he has a pretty big role in the movie.
I imagine he will.
He does. Unfortunately, I've heard a couple spoilers, so...
So shit.
Say nothing more.
I'm shutting my mouth!
I can vouch definitely for me and Ulrich that the whole war side of the movie is going to be amazing.
Oh yeah,
to see rebel troopers actually down in the dirt in the ditches firing over sand berms, you know, and watching X-wings fly. I am beyond hyped.
The end part of this last trailer where they have the AT-AT just like pivoting to clearly blow the crap out of a lot of people.
Yes,
that's awesome.
That's
the Battle of Hoth again. You know, that's like, okay, you're scrappy, you got the righteous side behind you. Here's the biggest thing on four legs, and it's got cannons.
And they gave it a good whack with a rocket launcher, which makes you sit back and go, why didn't they have those on Hoth?
Right.
Budget.
Yeah, budget. Just,
well, actually, I was thinking about them. That. If you look at the AT-ATs in Empire Strikes Back, and you look at these, I think they're called ATACTs, I guess they're cargo transport AT-ATs.
Yeah, they are different looking.
They're different, but I don't think they're as big as the Imperial AT-ATs that you see in Empire Strikes, as you see in Hoth.
Right.
I think the ones in Hoth you see are actually bigger than the ones that you see in this film.
Yeah, if you look at these from the trailer, they look a little spindlier I guess is the word I would use. They don't look quite as beefy, which again makes sense because this is a before the Battle of Hoth, so earlier version or non-combat version. Okay, cool. You can always say, you can always point to those two directions. Also, the ones on Hoth were Vader's personal bros, so obviously the best of the Empire follows Vader. So this won't be Blizzard Force, but it will still be awesome.
Just down and dirty, gritty rebels, and I love that they've got Alan Tudyk.
Yeah,
his robot that he plays is so snarky, and it's got a bit of that HK-47 feel.
Yeah,
and I'm excited about his character because
I really hope Alan... he says meatbag.
That'd be amazing.
Well, I mean. You see it awesome. In the trailer. You see in the trailer how he's like, you know, Captain, whatever his name is, says you're not an enemy. I'll let you live now. You know,
yes.
I mean,
and there is just an emphasis on now.
Yeah. So I'm interested, and what a lot of people don't realize, and I may have mentioned this before, but I just think it's awesome. They've got the girl who plays the woman that they've got playing Mon Mothma had actually played that role before in The Revenge of the Sith on a scene that was edited out and left on the cutting room deleted scenes floor.
Yeah.
But
in the theatrical version, you can sort of see her like walking out of a meeting, and that's about
it. But I just, you know, it's that attention to detail of canon that, I mean, they could have easily recast her because it's now Disney Star Wars. It's no longer George Lucas's, so they could have easily recast her. Jimmy Smits has confirmed that he's coming back as Bail Organa, so that's awesome.
Yes. It is awesome.
You know, so I think it's really cool to see that they're bringing characters and they're connecting them to the prequel trilogy into this film, which ties everything even better. You know, like, I mean, like we've discussed before, you got Forrest Whitaker playing Saw Gerrera, which last time you saw him was the Clone Wars cartoon. So it's just, there's so much awesome coming out of this one film. I think more friends of mine have expressed their excitement for Rogue One than what they gave for The Force Awakens. But I kind of look at that at the same frame of mind of everybody was excited when The Phantom Menace came out. It was world-changing, The Phantom Menace, new Star Wars. And then The Force Awakens comes out, everybody was beyond their mind, excited for it, and then after it came out, even though it's one of the top-billed films on the planet, second to Avatar, you get people complaining about it. So, you know, as much as people hype and excite for the Rogue One movie, I guarantee you, somebody's going to walk out of that theater all puffed up, get on their computer because, you know, they're so high and mighty and they have to inform just how terrible this was, and they're going to pound on their keyboard and why wasn't Kyle Katarn involved and where was, you know, Bria Theron and blah, 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 you know, and it's, I'm already starting to think of telling these people to shut up.
People still complain about stuff from Empire, and that came out in 1981.
Well, here's my thing.
And
people
and
complain,
it's the best in the series.
It is. And people want to... I sat back about a month or so ago, and I sat back and I watched all six films. And you know, people like to put blinders on because it's the holy trilogy and you know, A New Hope, you can't say no wrong about it, but let me just say something terrible about it. Okay, and this is just ignoring the fact that this was made in the 70s on a very... scrapped together budget, we all know that, but everybody complains about how bad the plot was and the script and everything was for the prequel movies, but nobody, and I never noticed this until just a few months ago, nobody sits back and realizes the reason the Death Star and the Empire finds Yavin base is because Leia leads them straight there. She even says it to Han, they're tracking the ship. No way, sister, not this ship. Of course they're tracking. That's the only reason to explain the ease of our escape. It's like...
And they still do it.
They go straight to Yavin. Nobody wants to mention that when they complain about how terrible the prequels were, but yet, you know, A New Hope, if you sit down and watch it, it's not a good film. I mean, It's a great film for what it was in the 70s and the fact that it launched this wonderful franchise where I have made more great friends in this entire world than I could have ever asked for. But if you're going to complain about these films, especially the prequels, you got to give... I mean, you got to look at all of them together and realize, you know, A New Hope isn't as... what's the word I'm thinking of? It's not as unfallible as people wish to ignore it to be.
Oh, no.
You know, it...
No, it was... The script was written by a college student, and the dialogue is awkward in certain spots. The plot is full of holes. Like, I mean, there's a lot of... There's a lot of little stuff, like even things like, okay, so this is a giant battle station, you know, with X million people on it, X thousand TIE fighters. They send six.
Right? Like, honestly, if this
thing is, like, filled with some of the greatest military minds in the Empire, and they still only send six, like, come on.
Well, and it's got the equivalent of a dunk tank target.
Right. Right, exactly. Like, if the Rebels had been able to just do, like, two more passes, one of them, without the Force, would have gotten it at some point. Or, one of them would have figured, oh, I can just fly up from the top and go straight down. Why am I going through this trench?
Yeah.
Well, I think there was a specific reason why they had to go through the trench.
Easiest way. Or lasers. That, but still, it's just like, with only six guys flying around up there to stop them like this, they would have gotten it eventually.
And I know a lot of people hate the special editions. I personally love them. I think if they were going to do they could have, of all the things that they failed to do, what they should have done is, yeah, you got a couple extra X-Wings, so now you get to see the full 30 flight of X-Wings and Y-Wings flying off from Yavin Base when they do that. But they could have added more to that dogfight and thrown in a few more background ships and Imperial ships.
Yeah.
You know, they could have...
And still, I just realized, like, the Falcon still flies in, apparently completely uncontested the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, it is literally able to just fly up behind Darth Vader.
And I would have also, when they're leaving Tatooine, and they blast at Mos Eisley, and the Star Destroyers are up there blockading them... Don't worry, kid, I know a few maneuvers, and he lists to the left. I mean, he doesn't, they could have gone in, and I know this will never happen, and I know people would lose their minds if Disney came out and said they're going to do a Disney special edition, but if Disney came back through and cleaned up a lot of the things that they did in that, and added things, because if you look at the films, As historical film, cinematography and everything, the original edition is beautiful. But if you were to want to adjust it so it fits the natural flow of the films from Episode 5 and forward, it's lacking so much that they could put in there, and I would love to see. You know, like, in Rogue One, you see the trailer of the Death Star, and you see, like, 20 Star Destroyers floating around it. And then all of a sudden, now it's by itself, like, completely undefended? Really?
Well, because it's finished at that point.
Yeah, and it has, a total of six, TIE fighters protecting it.
Yeah, it's the Death Star. It's supposed to be undefeatable.
So,
it's a Titanic.
The Space Tanic.
Can we just get on how the fact that they're doing that Rogue One is yet another film where they're having yet another Death Star?
Well, to be
fair... I mean,
come
on, that was the whole thing with Force Awakens.
It is the same Death Star. They're not...
I know, I'm just...
Like, I mean, but yes, it is another, like, all the Star Wars films that we've got, like, I think, three, four, six... Yeah, four of them, of the seven, specifically mention a Death Star of some kind, and then the seventh one just has a bigger Death Star.
You mean a bigger, because six has a
bigger
Death
Star. Like, they even make fun of it in that movie. They're like, okay, so they made it big. Like,
yeah.
Like, So yeah, so this will just further increase that ratio in the direction of like Death Stars to not Death Stars.
And the way I am, man, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I've got friends like, oh, I'm gonna critique it. It's like, then why go watch it? Why waste your time? I'm a fan. I watch it. I'll
get a part eventually. Tell you, but yeah, that first time I go, I'm not gonna care what happens.
Yeah. You want to go critique something, go watch Suicide Squad.
I remember a time when people didn't critique things. Like, I remember a time when people just went and enjoyed. And I don't know why we've gotten, as a culture, to a place where we feel
Twitter,
it's
Facebook, everyone has their opinion in their platform.
But
yeah, exactly. The internet. The internet has ruined films for people because that's a soundboard where you can get on there and you can put your opinion, because by golly, everybody needs to know how much I hated this film.
Well, my hope for the world is that people can learn to enjoy things again. And I mean, I remember, here we go, Tony, you can get in this boat with me. I remember when Return of the Jedi came out, and I remember being so excited after Empire, and I'll never forget, my mom brought home like this book that had pictures in it of, and it was like the, because they didn't really do TV trailers like they do now. And so I remember getting that book and looking through it and just being like, oh my gosh, this is going to be the most amazing movie ever. And getting so, yeah, and just getting so excited about it, because they didn't have, I mean, they didn't really hype like they do now. And I wish, I mean, part of me loves seeing what's going on with the movies, because a lot of that is coming back. I wish people could enjoy it and not get so angry and grumpy about things and just enjoy it, guys. You know, I mean, I've heard a couple people say this is an amazing time to be a Star Wars fan, and it is.
I
grew up with this when I was a little kid, and it kind of came back for the prequels, but they weren't. There's a generation of people that love the prequels, and like that's what they grew up with, and that's awesome, and I respect that. I think the reason there's prequel hate is because the folks that grew up with the original three movies, they were just so different, and it was just so, like, it was similar, but not what it was, and so I think that's why sometimes people feel disconnected. And what I love about these movies is it's like, once again, everybody's back to having that wonder and that awe and just that enthusiasm for movies that really tell just this incredible story with rich characters. And Rogue One, I think I personally am particularly excited about, because I'm watching the trailers and I'm seeing things from my childhood. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, the droids and the ships and the costumes that I remember. And yeah, there's some new ones in there, but oh, the old ones. I'm so excited. And I know that people are going to pick it apart, but I hope that people can also just kind of give themselves that freedom to enjoy. It's totally cool for you to have an opinion, but really, just try to enjoy it. Relax, like, chill out, enjoy. Give yourself that permission to have that moment of wonder.
See, that's why they made movies like Tropic Thunder, where you're not supposed to go in. That's like, I pick this apart, I dare you. Everything's on the surface, I dare you.
Yep.
Which is one of my other favorite movies, even though it is subject matter a terrible movie. Alrighty, that is about all we have for this episode of Keldabi Talk Radio. On behalf of myself, Thaxos, Misha, and Dar, like to thank Ulrich for coming on with us tonight. It was awesome to have you.
Likewise, good coming back. Maybe it won't be 2 years for the next time I come talk with you guys.
Well, yeah, we gotta get you on sooner.
Yeah. But yeah, on behalf of everybody here, thank you for listening, and listen in next time.
Bye. Good night, everyone. We love you.
See ya.
Later. I'm still going to kill you, Dora.